If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Find another pathway.
When all boats rise,
we will shine. skyway. That day is coming soon.
When hope goes west.
That day is coming soon.
You've been listening to When All Boats Rise by Little Feat, a song released back in the summer that you may have missed. Little Feat are, without a doubt, one of the pioneering bands of the jam band scene, dating back, well, to the late 60s. They've managed to keep going after personnel have passed and remain one of the most influential bands in rock music. The list of bands they've influenced is too many to list. Their style is unique, their sound a blend of many genres, and their performances legendary. So it is with great pleasure that I was able to catch up with founding member Bill Payne to talk about the band in its current formation and much more. Have a listen. Let's start here with When All Boats Rise. You put out a song over the summer, a new recording, which we were all excited to hear. What prompted the release of When All Boats Rise?
Well, the release of it, I think, was one thing. The writing of it was another, right? So writing it was done with a friend of mine, Tom Garnsey, who we've written several songs with over the years. Tom is a promoter in Montana. He's also a musician. He plays in a group called the Hooligans. I produced one of their records, and et cetera, so on. So there was that aspect. And our manager, Cameron Sears, he and I were talking, and he was saying something about, hey, when all boats rise. And I go, I'm going to use that as a title. So, but the release of it was simply to let people know we're around. We have a new band. For me, the purpose of having a band and calling it Little Feat is not only about our past, it's about what we're doing now. We're not going to escape our past. That song we did, Hanging On to the Good Times, we couldn't escape from where we came, right? We're not like, unlike any other band that holds those credentials.
The new band is interesting because, I mean, this is a band that's unfortunately always had to, over the course of 40 years, had to replace members. Including the original, including Lowell. This is a band that's always had to replace members, and through it all, you've been a constant, and a few others have been around. What is it about the longevity of the band? Is it the songs? Is it the vibe? What is it about Little Feat that forces the longevity and the need to evolve and replace members instead of just saying, okay, that snapshot's done, it's time for Bill and whoever's left to create a new band distinct from Little Feat?
Well, the answer is Little Feat is bigger than me. It's bigger than any of us. It was built on the concept in 1969 between Lowell and myself of being in an elastic situation. Do we need horns? Do we want to have another guitar player? We did a couple of years later. We brought in Paul Brer. We auditioned 14 bass players the first year in 69. What kind of music do we want to play? Rock and roll, R&B, some jazz, some Mother's Invention, the Fugs. You know, we were, the vehicle is wide open. That's one reason I selfishly hang on to it, because with most bands and most institutions, which I guess Little Feat by this time is an institution, they, by nature, the way people try and define you, they narrow your scope. And I thought we should never have that. We can narrow ourselves. We can set on the guardrails or whatever you want to call them. But in terms of what we're doing, let's leave it wide open. What I bought a book last night on Ornette Coleman. I saw Ornette Coleman, I'm pretty sure I did, in Santa Maria at Allen Hancock Junior College. Probably 67, maybe 68. And although we don't play that freestyle, there was a time when we did try that kind of thing. You know, how's this cloak we have on work? You know, that the freedom of Little Feet is what I love about it and why I feel confident calling it Little Feet.
It's true that it's a genre-less band. I mean, there's obviously a Little Feet sound, but in many ways you are, like many bands of that era, you are a genre-less band before it was in vogue to be a genre-less band. And before it was, you know, currently there are bands that don't fit the record label or music store racking system. And you were ahead of your time in terms of not fitting any sort of racking system. Sure, you're a rock band, but you're a lot more than a rock band. Was that purposeful as well to sort of, and as you say, you were not only elastic in terms of the composition of the band, but in terms of the music the band made, was that purposeful and continues to be purposeful as well?
Yeah, I think so. When your antecedents are Frank Zappa, Fugs, like I said, the Holy Modal Rounders, Richie's band, the Fraternity of Man. But I often tell the story of Brahms, who heard what he called the footsteps of giants. And he was listening to Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, Haydn. And he felt like, well, what right do I have to step into those shoes? Well, for us, it was Zappa, but it was also Ray Charles. It was Leon Russell. It was Bob Dylan. It was the band. It was the Stones. It was the Beatles. It was on. You go down that pyramid, and it's some heavy, not even competition, just like, where do we fit? Can we fit? Do we have anything to say as an artist to even attempt to join that club? And when I was in Amsterdam, just outside of Jump Eden Hall, Rolling Stones on Mass came to hear us play. And Keith Richards was in the dressing room. I went, oh, Keith, man, come on. And he goes, puts his arm around me, draws me in. He says, oh, mate, we're all part of the same cloth. In other words, welcome to the club, brother. And I took it for what it was, which is, you know, none of us would want to join a club, kind of like Groucho Marx. We'd never join a club that would accept us as a member. But we are indeed a part of a club that's pretty exclusive. But it's not exclusive to if you're a player in a garage band or you just sit around the house playing guitar. We all are musicians. It's not delegated or designated that you have to do this and this and this to be a musician. We accept that mantle or go after that mantle freely. And I just think trepidation is not a bad way to approach it sometimes.
Right. In terms of fitting in or in terms of doing what you want, in terms of
figuring out who you are. What is it you want to say? That's the primary thing is you're sharing your life with people that whether you acknowledge it or want to acknowledge it, they're fans, but they're a lot more than that. They're human beings that are going through good times, tough times, the things we all go through. We fall in love, we fall out of love, our parents die. You know, there's things that happen in life. And if we can be a comfort or a challenge to folks and to ourselves, I think that's a good reason to keep this thing going. And not unlike Tom Wolfe's book, The Right Stuff, where the astronauts never wanted to think about, well, why did we do it? We didn't want to think about it either back in the day. But I'm 72 years old. I'm in Denver. I'm with the Doobie Brothers. I'm looking at November to join Little Feet. I was just talking to Charlie Starr. God, was it last night? No, it was the night before last from the Blackberry Smoke. We were talking about another song we've written too. I feel engaged in what I'm doing, man.
Do you think the engagement not only comes from the music that's obviously so rewarding, but also from the fans that have stuck by you? I mean, how important is the community of fans that have stuck by you and the new fans that have come on board? I mean, I'm not a lifer. I'm not around long enough to be a lifer, but the fans that have come on since, that have discovered Waiting for Columbus, or that have discovered Dixie Chicken or any of the other albums. How important are the fans in the tale of Little Feat?
I think they're exceedingly important. It's one reason, God, I don't know how many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, I embraced the notion of a grassroots organization. And I took the impetus to do it from, I could have taken it from the Grateful Dead, or there was several people that were doing it, but I took it from Hunter S. Thompson, his book, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail in 72. And it was a blueprint on how to put something together. And I did it because the professional side of management of labels, they were not taking care of us. And I've always thought, you know, look, I mean, if you're going to sell a band, sell it like you're selling a pair of shoes. What do you have to do on your end to get it on the rack, to promote it, to embellish it, whatever you want? We'll take care of the rest of it. I was taking care of the rest of it, which is a connection with our fans. And I was just talking to one of the guys last night, Larry Lister, who introduced me to, he and Steve Wells, two guys from the Midwest, introduced me to who Barack Obama was back in the day. I'd never heard of him. He was talking to rooms of 7 to 15 people. He was a senator. So, yeah, these connections are really important. I got to say that where Little Feat is right now, we're with Vector Management. Ken Levitan is he's wonderful. Lou Harris is there. We have Dennis McNally, who set all this up. I want to develop the professional side of that thing that makes, because I mean, I've got limited time on this planet and I want to make it count.
Is it bigger than you at this point? Is it bigger than any? I mean, who would have thought that Little Feat may have continued when half of the team was gone and you know, when Lowell passed away? I mean, is at this point bigger than Bill Payne and Lowell George? Is Little Feat, could Little Feat continue, God forbid, if Bill wasn't around?
You know, it very well might. I don't know. I said early at the onset of our conversation that it is indeed bigger than me and it's bigger than any of us. So if I were to believe that, and I do, it's not inconceivable, because there's a lot of bands out there that they're Little Feat, what do you call it? Tribute bands, I guess.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get that. That's not the same thing as being Little Feat.
Right.
But maybe Scott Sherrard, maybe Tony Leone. Who knows? I mean, I'm not setting any limits on people.
Is it difficult to replace a Paul Bearer? I mean, Scott is an excellent player, and we know Scott quite well. He's been on this podcast a couple of times, but just the notion of replacing some of these very talented people with out of necessity, obviously. But is it a difficult thing to replace a Paul Bearer, a Lowell George, any of the other members? Yeah, I mean,
you can't replace any of them.
Right,
that's the point. Is they are irreplaceable, just like I will be, because not a lot of people play like I do.
Right.
They can mimic certain things I do, just like, God, Jeff Beccaro used to go, hey, man, here's Richie. And he'd throw out some Richie licks. And I love Jeff. And I cried when he passed away. I mean, I was just like devastated with his loss. You can't replace Jeff.
Right.
But you were talking about discovery of Little Feat from people.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we all discover things. I mean, there's one guy who goes, well, why are you playing New Orleans music? You're not from there. I said, well, my parents were married there. And yeah, you're right, I'm not from there. But I also play Beethoven. I'm not from Hamburg. I play some Mozart. I'm not from Vienna. Is that okay with you?
Right.
You know, we discover things in life, whether it's an opera, Glenn Gould, Alicia de la Rocha, and this is just on the classical side, Martha Argerich. We've discovered Cuban music, world music. That is the point of being inquisitive. And it not only covers the music, but the books, the food, the friends, the way we operate our minds. That's how we keep vital. And I think, what do we call it? Little Feet, the Rolling Stones, or Bob's Your Uncle. It kind of boils down to having a mindset of openness and a commitment to a subjective quality.
Join the Band was released in 2008, and it is a collaboration with Jimmy Buffett and Emmylou Harris and Bob Seger, and the list goes on and on. The influence of this band, though, is well beyond those artists that obviously were fans of the band. When you hear Mo, who's a band that you know is 20 or 30 years your junior, or Phish, or even, you know, single artists covering some of your songs, is that exciting for you? Is it rewarding? Is it a pat on your back? How do you feel about the legacy of your music continuing on through bands that are a lot like you in many ways, that are exploring different territories?
I think one word sums it up to a certain degree, and it's the word humble. It's humbling to have that. Because of what I was talking about earlier, which is this notion that we're a part of something that it's a cool thing being a musician. I like it. I love the fear, the commitment. You know what I mean? Somebody gave me a quote the other day. It was from Muhammad Ali, Jack Spencer, who's a wonderful artist, a photographer, a dear friend. And Muhammad Ali said, if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough.
Right.
So if I'm a part of somebody else's dream or a part of their lingo, you know, how we influence them, I'm kind of blown away by it on one level. I accept it in a completely other way as a steadfast pro, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to say thank you when somebody goes, hey man, you're a rock star. And I said, if you want to think of me as a rock star, go ahead. In my head, I'm a musician. But I'm not going to disillusion anybody about anything at this juncture.
Even with the longevity of the career and the influence of the career, has Little Feet received the recognition that you think you guys deserve, that you think the band deserves, in terms of the body of work, in terms of the musicianship, in terms of the canon? Do you think that obviously there are musicians that love you and you have fans, but do you think that, I don't even want to say radio, because that's a silly notion, but do you think that America has recognized Little Feet and their place in rock history to the extent that you think is appropriate?
Well, I think it's an ongoing and it's an ongoing thing. It's people say, well, should you be in the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Well, I went to that museum and I stand next to this lady and I go, there's a video of me playing Outland and singing it. I go, you know, I nudged her. I said, that's me singing that song up there, by the way. And I said, it's kind of weird being in a museum, first and foremost, and also my writing over there to your right. I always thought you had to be dead or entombed in some sort of encasement. She looks and goes, that is you.
Yeah, so you're there anyway, right?
I'm there. You know, I think it's what I like for Little Feet to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is inducted. Well, for many, many years, I didn't think it was necessary, honestly. Now, because of Sam Clayton, because of Pereira, because of the legacy, do we deserve to be in there? You bet. Does it have to happen now or 50 years from now? I hope it does. I mean, there's not that many people in there, but do we deserve a place? Absolutely, we do.
You're busy. You're in two bands right now, which is crazy. And I'm sure hard to get your head around that you are. I mean, you've been doing it long enough, but still, what's the plan for Little Feet moving forward now that you have this re-engineered lineup and you released one single? Is it touring and perhaps releasing more music? Is it just touring? What's the plan for Feet moving forward?
The plan for Feet moving forward is a request night in November, which we've never done. And the next year, we're going to visit Jamaica again. If Florida hasn't fallen off the map from COVID and that idiot governor of theirs, DeSantis, to Santa Claus, we will play Florida and North Carolina in opposite order. And then we're going to do Waiting for Columbus, which is a really ballsy thing to do. And I think the appropriate thing to do. But listen, I've written 20 songs with Robert Hunter.
Yeah.
Four of which we did with Little Feet. So I've got 16 other tunes with Robert. I've written two with Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke. Paul Muldoon and I've got 5-6 songs. I've written with John Leventhal. So writing to me is a big deal again. And Tom Garnsey. And I want to put out at least another record, probably another two or three with Little Feet.
Yeah, like Rooster Rag was 2012. So it's been a while since there's been a studio album, right?
I mean, so that is well in order. And honestly, if we weren't contemplating doing an album or to put out new music, I don't think I would have much interest in doing Little Feet. I don't have to go out and play Dixie Chicken again. I mean, I love it, but you know what I mean? If that's my sole reason to do it is to do that, and I'll just join a couple of these pickup bands that are doing a night of Little Feet, and I'll be a guest artist or something. But no, the platform, when Paul was nearing the end of his life, I went from a Doobie Brothers tour. I flew up to Minneapolis. I had never sung Fat Man in the Bathtub or Dixie Chicken, other than in the shower, maybe, in my life. And I went there and I said, I want to sing this. I mean, six or seven songs. We rehearsed them. And people later were going, wow, I mean, how did you do that? And why weren't you singing earlier?
Right.
And I said, well, you know, we're a band. By design, Paul was singing a lot of those songs. I'm not up to pushing people off a microphone. My time slot opened, and not in a way I would have wanted it to, but that's why I stepped up to the plate. I didn't know if I could do it or not. I just said, I'm going to do it tonight. Let's see what happens. We had Larry Campbell and Teresa Williams with us. They could easily sing any of those songs. I mean, I had fun doing them. And I didn't agonize over, well, what key do we want to do, Fat Man in the Bathtub? Juanita, my sweet. Well, let's do it in key of C. You know, boom, we're in.
Yeah.
A lot of it's just quick decisions, but with a sense of what rock and roll is and what we do as musicians is all I've practiced my entire life. Performance is not practice, it's performance.
Right. Yeah, they say that it's the work between gigs that's the work. It's the performance that's the easy part, right?
You let it go. And sometimes you hit the wall. Sometimes you go off the rails. You know what I always loved about Richie Hayward was just, and I would direct people to my website, BillPayneCreative.com, to read an article or an essay, actually, that I wrote on Richie. It was about 10,000 words. And it describes this guy that when he came from Iowa to Hollywood, the Hollywood Hills, it was like air being let out of a balloon. You know, he was just there and he played like he drove. He drove with 1 foot on the brake and 1 foot on the gas. Mm-hmm. So you're bowing as you're going down the road.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ride with you driving ever again. But I love playing music with the guy. Tony Leone, who's with us, he says, I've been listening to Richie Hayward since I was 12 years old. And, okay, that's one thing. I've been listening to Vladimir Horowitz or Ray Charles. It doesn't mean I can play like him.
Right.
But Tony Leone has stepped up to the plate. We now have a drummer that can hold that conversation and yet be himself. Mm-hmm. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't eclipse Richie. No one can eclipse Richie or replace him. But I got a feeling that we're in for a very, very interesting ride. We have not played in a room with each other yet. We've done recordings long distance, and they've been really, really good. So I'm waiting.
I think we all are. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's a real treat to be able to talk to somebody that I've listened to for so long. Thank you for the music over the years. Thank you for your contribution, obviously. And can't wait to see what comes next. So thank you.
Oh, a real pleasure, Ira. It was nice having a conversation with you, and very much appreciated.
I know. Awesome, right? For more on Little Feet, visit littlefeet.net. Before we leave you, let's head back now to the Peach Music Festival in 2018, where members of Little Feet joined Mo for a set comprised of the Little Feet live performance of Waiting for Columbus. Here is Fat Man in the Bathtub.
there's a fat man in a bathtub with a blues. I hear you moan.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.